I want to do something a little differently today in terms of the message. I want to assume perhaps a more teaching moment, to see this as a teaching moment, and to spend some time with words. You know, I love words and the origins of words and so forth. And when I was pondering the text for this week and the theme that began to be suggested to me, I couldn't come up with a word. So you will notice the title for the sermon is a made-up word. That's just like me, my crazy mind. But it is that you will see in both the Deuteronomy reading and the Gospel reading that there is an invitation. There's a premium being placed on doing what you hear. Don't just hear, don't just listen, but do it. And in our English language, we do have two words that float with that meaning that goes beyond hearing. One is hearken and the other is heed. They're almost synonyms. But somehow I didn't feel like they carried the import of what Jesus was saying and what the text from Deuteronomy was saying sufficiently. So I just added a hyphenated word. Hearken action, to lay emphasis on where we are meant to go with that which we hear. So the question I want to invite us to ponder as we reflect on the words today, the words from Scripture, is two questions. I don't believe it is as much for our community of faith or for those who are seeking to follow Jesus to pose and answer the question, what do you believe? It's an important question, but it's not the first question. It's not the most important question. I think a question that I would like us to ponder today and in our lives daily is, what difference does what you and I believe make in the world? It's not enough to believe. What difference does it make in our lives and in the life of the world? Just ask you to host that question as we ponder some things. There are two things I would like to address in terms of setting up the context for our consideration today and our reflection. Over the last little while, I have been at conferences and in my reading just struck with the disconnect between much of our communities of faith and the world. Conversations I have with people in various scenarios suggest to me that there is an intrigue, a curiosity about the things that we do, the things of the faith, but not much commitment, not much engagement with it. And some of the reasons are very legitimate indeed. And I have a deep burning desire that we find ways to connect in our daily lives with people who are asking questions or may not even be asking the questions, but whose lives and whose challenges and whose experiences suggest that there are questions could be answered with the grace and good news of this Christian story. I have a deep passion and desire for that. This past weekend, Friday and Saturday, I was down in Montreal at the Montreal and Ottawa Conference of the United Church, a gathering educational event, and one of the presenters was my colleague and friend, Reverend Christopher White, who's the minister at Westminster Church in Whitby, with Westminster United Church. And he was sharing a number of things, but one thing that struck me, and I wanted to set as a backdrop for our consideration today. He was sharing, and he showed a clip on the screen of a commercial. One of his daughters is an actor. She's in her second year university, but she's an actor, and she has small parts in films, and she's done some commercials. One of the commercials that she did, I hadn't seen it before this, was for IKEA. She did a commercial for IKEA. It took 3 days to film this 30-second clip. And it describes a woman who is her mother, who plays her mother, describing all the wonderful furniture she has. Oh, I got this, and I got that at IKEA, and so forth, and so forth. And finally, Sarah, who's playing the daughter, tells her, "Be quiet, Mom. I can't take this anymore." Says, "If you don't be quiet, I'll shave my hair." And then the next scene you see her sitting down, buzz, 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 and so forth. And it's rather quaint. But what he shared was the story behind this. When she went and auditioned, they really wanted her, but they asked her, "Are you willing to shave your hair for the commercial?" And she said, no, I don't think I'd like to do that. She said, "You know, as an actor, if I was playing a part in a movie and it was playing the part of a cancer victim or someone with whom I could identify, I see a role there. But just to sell furniture and so forth, no, I'm not going to shave my hair." Then they offered her $3,000. "We'll pay you $3,000 to shave your hair for the commercial." And she said, "No, I'm sorry, I'm not going to. Maybe you need to find someone else." But they persisted. The producers wanted her particular demeanor and her acting ability just fit what they wanted. So they came back, and would you believe, they offered her $10,000 to shave her hair. Now, what Chris was saying, for the daughter of a minister getting ready to go to university, who's not going to turn down $10,000? You know? I mean, that's a pretty inviting offer. And then they had this conversation, and Sarah called her dad and said, "Dad, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to turn down the $10,000. And she said, "It's not that I don't need the money, but the reasons and the principles that I said why I didn't want to do it still hold. And if I give in and take this money, what else will I give into and take money for down the road?" Isn't that incredible? And the point that Chris went on to say was that the values and the ethics and the commitment to seemingly do a stupid thing in the eyes of many, he said, was formed in the church, was formed in the family, was formed by the community of faith. The community of faith has bequeathed to her a particular way of engaging the world, living ethically, living by principle, what seems foolish to many people. And the point was he was making was the important role that the community of faith plays in the formation of faith, in the formation of character, in the formation, if we do it right, if we get it right. And that is what the text from Deuteronomy is saying. The people of Israel were called upon and commanded by God, as spoken through Moses is depicted here, to be intentional and creative and committed in the way in which they conveyed and transmitted the faith. They were told not just to make it a project on Sunday, or in their case, on Saturday, on Sabbath, not just make it some special activity, but you hear what was said. Teach these things as you walk by the way, as you lie down, as you rise up. In other words, let the lifestyle, let the way in which you live your life so embody the commandments and the teaching that the children and the generations will catch it, not so much be taught it. Because faith is more often caught than taught. And it is through that lifestyle of embodied commandment and embodied ways of God that people get it, that the generations get it. It is more than just attending. It's more than believing. It becomes the part of your life. It becomes absolutely interwoven with how we are. And that is the integrity. That is the call. That is the high standard to which we are being invited by Jesus and by the full testimony of the Old Testament. So there's that. And then there's a book that I've been reading called Unchristian. And it comprises research that has been done in North America dealing with the attitudes and the views of those between 16 and 39 towards the church and Christianity. And it's very insightful. Here are some of the things that the young people that they discovered in terms of their views towards Christians and so forth. The Christians are the Christianity they experience, largely judgmental, hypocritical, old-fashioned, anti-homosexual, too involved in politics, out of touch with reality, insensitive to others, boring, confusing. These are the views that that cohort of population sees or holds towards the church, towards the Christian faith. That, for whatever reason, has been their experience. That has been their conclusions. Now, we may argue here and there, maybe get defensive and so forth, but that is the reality. This is the context in which we exercise our ministry and are meant to call forth the compassion and the grace and the testimony needful to glorify God and to bless the world. And then the particular authors who conducted this research suggest at the end of the book that there are four ways in which we might respond to this that are in the order of the way of Jesus. The first is to respond with the right perspective like Jesus. So when Jesus met criticism, when people criticized Jesus, and he expected it, because the ways of Jesus and the ways of the reign of God are foolish, don't make sense in many ways to the world. They do not make sense to the $10,000 being offered that most people would grab. It doesn't make sense. The odd, peculiar ways of God's kingdom are different. And so Jesus says, expect persecution, expect criticism, expect critique. But let it be authentic. Let it not be because we are hypocritical and we are all of these things. So in other words, they're saying, cultivate the right perspective. Sometimes Jesus responded to critique with talking, with silence, with reframing the question, paying attention to the below-the-surface needs of the persons, the woundedness, the spiritual questing that came out in anger. Instead of defensiveness, how are we called to respond? The second is to connect with people. That Jesus' way of responding to all kinds of critique and his way of ministry was relationship, through going and seeking out those that nobody else wanted to deal with. Have relationships and conversations with those who are criticizing the way in which the church is behaving. Connect on an individual and a personal and corporate way. Non-defensive, but loving and generous in spirit. The third is to be creative. Be imaginative about helping people appreciate this wonderful treasure that is the gospel of Jesus, the way of Christ. Be imaginative. Take risks. Be prepared to fail. Be imaginative in reaching out. And the fourth is to serve people. The touchstone is going to be developing a lifestyle of compassion, a passion for service and for justice and mercy and forgiveness, to model something different so people's experience more latently of the Christian faith, of the way in which a community forms itself and expresses itself, begins to challenge their own views that they have held of the church. The question we ask often is, how have we managed to make the attractive grace, the generous love of God, so unattractive to so many? And so it is a sobering question for us, isn't it? I believe. And so I want to deal with a few words over the next 10 minutes or so, with some words from the gospel text that help us, I think, begin to get a handle on this. The words matter, I believe. Jesus is, as I said, talking to the disciples, overheard by the crowds, and he's speaking about integrity. He's speaking about authenticity. Because right away, people have come and say, Lord, I have done all these wondrous things in your name. And Jesus says, just because you say, Lord, Lord, and do these things, doesn't mean you are doing the will of God. It's challenging, but yet gracious nonetheless, because Jesus knows that our best selves are lived when there's congruity between how our hearts and our minds and our faith is inclined and the actions that we undertake. That there's dissonance that arises when we are just faking it, when we're just doing things out of pure duty or even obedience, but our heart isn't in it. And Jesus is inviting us to have our hearts transformed so that that which is expressed is not a project or a duty or a program for someone. It is the natural outworking of the deep desire to be authentic and to share the good news of the gospel with people because we care for people, because we love them, because we want the best for them, not because they are some experiment. And so Jesus is saying, using words that really matter, everyone who hears. Now, here's the thing. We go beyond this about hearing and heeding. Jesus is asking us not just to hear, but to hearken that will lead to action. The word he says is do, poieo in Greek. Do the works of my Father. Do the will of God. And this kind of doing, these acts are not just trying something. They're acts that have purpose. They have direction. They have pregnant understandings of how God wants to see the world and relationships work. And so he uses specific words. And then he says that there's a difference between people who approach these, and he uses the word wise and foolish. Now, wise is an interesting word. The root word of wise is someone who has adopted a purpose, who is concerned and who is desirous to live in harmony with those around them. It's a very full, pregnant word. So it's not wise just intellectual wisdom or being able to negotiate skillfully through arguments. It has to do with a profound concern and commitment to people with a purpose. So the wise people, when he says, as I was saying with the children, the wise people who are building a house, not just a physical house. Remember, Jesus often spoke on many levels. It is not just the wisdom of architecture. You build on rock because it's harder to build on rock. You build on sand and the storms come and the one on sand, the weak foundation falls down. Yes, that is true in terms of physical building. But what he's referring to is the biblical use of the term house, which means a place, a people, a context. in which there is built up enduring values and faith and commitment, when that happens, and storms will come. Notice that in the story that Jesus offers, storms come to both the wise and the foolish. Just because we are wise, just because we are building on faith, just because we are building with integrity, does not mean storms will not come. Does not mean there will not be conflict, there will not be criticism, there will not be duplicitous behavior. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that when they come, not if they come, when these storms assail this foundation we are trying to build on the rock who is Jesus Christ, then it will not be shaken. In other words, it will not collapse, because the enduring value and meaning and commitment of the faith and the commitment to others outside will endure. But if we are like the foolish one, and the word for foolish, moros, where we get our word moron and even sophomore. You've heard the word sophomore? Did you know sophomore means wise fool? From Sophia, Sophos, and Moros, the wise fool. A wise fool is someone who knows what they ought to do, but they don't do it. For whatever reason, they don't do it. It's a wise fool. The foolish ones are those who are self-centered. The foolish ones build on sand, which means that the things on which they label their lives, they label their worth, they gather things together, is shifting. We know that. We have only to read the history of the stock market. We have only to read the history of people who have elaborate alarm systems only to have them stolen. What happened in Vancouver just last week? Terrible tragedy of art, stolen. Those things do not secure. They think they will secure us, but they don't in the end. The foolish ones are selfish and self-focused. And that on which those houses built. So communities of faith, communities of followers of Jesus who are unwise, who are foolish in building up their programs or their ministry on formality, on the kind of structure that has no purpose or direction, on strife, on spectacular things, rather than those simple ways of the kingdom. It's not going to stand when the trials come, because the foundation is misplaced. So Jesus' invitation, I believe, to the community of faith and to us today, is to recognize the absolute essential and seminal value that we have. Those little ones that were there, the youth that are here, all of us, in how we form and commit to building a foundation that will help us grow in faith, that will help bequeath the next generation with a vital faith that is committed not just to doing church here, but to doing church as a lifestyle out in the world. To take seriously the people who are estranged from the ways of God. To take seriously the people who are criticizing and complaining about the ineffectiveness and the out-of-touchness of the communities of faith. To take seriously opportunities to be in relationship and to listen and to share in non-defensive ways. To take seriously what it means to gather our strength and our wisdom so that we may engage in the ways of justice to transform the structural oppressions on so very many people. Hearken action. What difference does what we believe make to ourselves and to the world? Jesus is asking that. Be a wise person. Let us be a wise house here at Parkdale. Let us decide and commit to how we will form one another. How will we be formed by God into a community that takes seriously the transformation of ourselves, our community, and the world. Let us not be foolish. Let us not be self-centered. Let us not be a church that looks only in on itself, who are unconcerned about those outside, those who are not yet here. Let us find a way to change the perception of the way of God and the ways of Jesus through the way we live every single day. What is it the Deuteronomy writer says? Let us embody the commandments and the grace and the compassion and the love and the justice of God when we lie by the way, when we walk, when we work, when we sleep, when we play, when we have coffee, when we stop in the pub, when we help our children, when we do things for neighbors unasked. Let it be evident in all that we do how much we love the people of this world that God so loves. Let our faith be worn on our sleeves and our shoes and our mouths and our eyes and our clothes and our hospitality and our money and our energy. Let it be evident that we are committed to doing the will of God. And then, I believe we will have engaged in hearken action to the glory of God. Amen.